patient was growing agitated, and the other occupants of the room were staring at her. Me. Small doses, I told myself. I could handle the memories in modest quantities. After all, I hadn't been hurt by the fall, and Rayad was sweet to me for a while. But his kindness only lasted until I started failing his tests again. To distract myself from the memories, I counted the cracks in the ceiling. I was up to 56 when Valak arrived. He carried a tray of food in one hand and a file folder in the other. I eyed the steaming omelet with suspicion. "What's in it?" I demanded. "More sleeping pills? Or another new poison?" Every muscle in my body had stiffened. I tried unsuccessfully to sit up. "How about giving me something to make me feel good for a change?" "How about something to keep you alive?" Valak asked. He pulled me to a sitting position and offered a pipette filled with my antidote. Then he placed the tray of food on my lap. "No need for sleeping pills. The medic told me you picked up on that taste last night." Valak's voice held a note of approval. "Taste your breakfast and tell me if you would allow the commander to eat it." Valak hadn't been exaggerating when he said I'd have no days off. Sighing, I smelled the omelet. No unusual odors. I cut the omelet into quarters, examining each for any foreign material. Taking a small piece from each section, I put them into my mouth one at a time and chewed slowly. Swallowing, I waited to discern any aftertaste. I sniffed the tea and stirred it with a spoon before sipping. Rolling the liquid over my tongue, I detected a sweet taste before I swallowed. "Unless the commander doesn't like honey in his tea, I wouldn't reject this breakfast." "Then eat it." I hesitated. Was Valak trying to trick me? Unless he had used a poison I hadn't learned, the breakfast was clean. I ate every morsel, and then drained the tea while Valak watched. "Not bad," he said. "No poisons. Today." One of the medics brought another tray to Valak. This tray held 4 white cups of an olive-colored liquid that smelled like mint. Replacing my breakfast tray with a new one, Valak said, "I want to go over some tasting techniques. Each of these cups contains mint tea. Taste one." Clasping the closest mug, I took a sip. An overwhelming flavor of mint pervaded my mouth. I choked. Valak grinned. "Taste anything else?" I attempted another mouthful. The mint dominated. "No." "All right. Now pinch your nose tight and try again." After some fumbling with my bandaged arm, I managed to gulp the tea while holding my nose. My ears popped. I marveled at the taste. "Sweet, no mint." My voice sounded silly, so I released my grip. Immediately, the mint eclipsed the sweetness. "Correct. Now try the others." The next cup of mint tea hit a sour taste, the third had a bitter flavor, and the fourth was salty. "This technique works for any drink or food. Blocking your sense of smell eliminates all flavors except sweet, sour, bitter, and salt. Some poisons are recognizable by one of those 4 flavors." Valak paged through his folder. "Here is a complete list of human poisons and their distinct tastes for you to memorize. There are 52 known poisons." I looked through the inventory of poisons. Some of them I had already smelled. My love was at the top. The list would have saved me from the dizziness, nausea, headaches, and occasional delusional effects of the poison. I brandished the paper in the air. "Why didn't you just give me this list instead of making me sample my love?" Valak stopped paging through his folder. "What would you learn from a list? Cat's gut tastes sweet. What does that taste like? Honey sweet? Apple sweet? There are different levels of sweetness, and the only way to learn them is to taste them yourself. The only reason I'm giving you this list is because the commander wants you working as soon as possible." Valak snapped his folder shut. "Just because you aren't going to taste those poisons now doesn't mean you won't in the future. Memorize that list. Once the medic releases you from the infirmary, I will test your knowledge. If you pass, then you can start work." "And if I fail?" "Then I'll be training a new taster." His voice was flat, monotone, but the force behind it caused my heart to lock. Valak continued. "Brazel will be in the castle for another 2 weeks. He has more business to attend to. I can't have you guarded all day, So Marge is preparing a room for you in my suite. I'll come back later to see when you'll be discharged. I watched Valak walk to the door. He glided across the room, balanced and athletic. I shook my head. Thinking about Valak was the absolute worst thing I could be doing. Instead, I focused on the list of poisons clutched in my hand. I smoothed the paper out and hoped my sweat hadn't smeared the ink. Relieved that the writing was legible, I began to study. I barely noticed when the medic came to check on my arm. She must have taken the tray of teacups because it disappeared from my lap. I had blocked out all the noise and commotion of the infirmary so that I jumped when a plate containing a round pastry was thrust under my nose. The arm that held the plate led to Rand. His grin was gleeful. "Look what I smuggled past Medic Mommy. Go ahead, eat it before she comes back." The warm dessert smelled like cinnamon. Melted white icing dripped down the sides, causing the cake to stick to my fingers when I picked it up. I examined the pastry closely, inhaling the aroma in search of a foreign smell. One small bite revealed multiple layers of dough and cinnamon. "My God, Yelena, you don't think I'd poison it?" Rand's face was pinched tight, as if he was in pain. "Exactly what I'd been thinking, but admitting it to Rand would offend him. His motives for being here were unclear. Seeming nice and friendly, he could be holding a grudge over his friend Oskov, the previous food taster. But then again, he was a potential ally. Who better to have on my side? Rand, the cook, whose food I'd be eating on a daily basis, or Valak, the assassin, who had a nasty tendency of poisoning my meals?" "Occupational hazard," I tried. He grunted, still put out. I took a big bite of the pastry. "Wonderful," I said, appealing to his ego to give me another chance. Rand's face softened. "Good, isn't it? My latest recipe. I take a long strip of pastry dough, cover it with cinnamon, roll it up into a ball, bake it, and then spread the icing on while it's hot. I'm having some trouble with the name, though. Cinnamon cake? Ball? Swirl?" Rand stopped his rambling to find a chair. After quite a bit of twisting to compensate for his unbendable left leg, he finally settled into a comfortable position. While I finished the pastry, Rand continued. "Don't tell Medic Mommy I gave you that. She doesn't like her patients eating anything but a thin gruel. She says the gruel promotes healing." "Well, of course it has an effect." He threw his arms up, exposing several burn scars around his wrists. "It tastes so terrible that anyone would get better just to get a decent meal." The wild gesture caused the other patients to glance our way. Rand leaned in closer to me and asked in a quiet voice, "So, Yelena, how are you feeling?" He looked at me as though he was appraising a selection of meat, determining which one would make the best roast. I was wary. Why would he care? "Gambling again?" I asked. He leaned back. "We're always gambling. Gambling and gossiping is all we servants do. What else is there? You should have seen the commotion and betting that went on when you were spotted being chased by Brazel's goons." Appalled, I said, "Nobody came to help me. The hallways were deserted." "That would be involvement in a situation that doesn't affect us directly. Servants don't ever do that. We're like cockroaches scurrying around in the dark." Rand's slender fingers waggled. "Shine a light? Poof." He flicked his long fingers for emphasis. "We disappear." I felt like the unlucky cockroach that got caught by the light, always scrambling to stay one step ahead while the shadow of a boot crept closer. "Anyway, the odds were against you. Most lost big, while only a few..." Rand paused dramatically. "Won big." "Since you're here, I suppose you won big." He smiled. "Yelena, I'm always going to bet on you. You're like one of the commander's terriers. A tiny, yappy dog you wouldn't look at twice, but once it grabs your pant leg, it won't let go. Poison the dog's meat and it won't bother you anymore." My sour tone deflated Rand's grin. "Trouble?" Surprised that the castle's gossip network hadn't already started laying odds about Valak's test, I hesitated. Rand liked to talk, and he could get me in trouble. No, it's just being the food taster and all. I hope that would satisfy him. Rand nodded. He spent the rest of the afternoon alternating between reminiscing about Oskov and digressing about potential new recipes. When Valak appeared, Rand stopped talking, his face paled, and he mumbled something about having to check on dinner. Lurching from his chair, he almost toppled in his haste to flee the room. Valak watched as Rand staggered out of the infirmary. What was he doing here? Valak's expression remained neutral, but the stillness of his body made me wonder if he was angry. Carefully choosing my words, I explained to him that Rand had come to visit. When did you meet him? A casual question, but again there was an undercurrent to his words. After I recovered from my love, I went in search of food and met Rand in the kitchen. Watch what you say around him. He's not to be trusted. I would have reassigned him, but the commander insisted he stay. He is a genius in the kitchen. Some kind of protégé. He started cooking for the king at a very young age. Valak stared at me with his cold, blue eyes, warning me away from Rand. Maybe that's why Valak hadn't liked Oskov. Being allied with someone who had been loyal to the king could cast more suspicion on me. But letting Valak scare me off rankled. I stared back at him with, I hoped, an indifferent look. Valak looked away. I was jubilant. In my mind, I had finally won a round. You leave the infirmary tomorrow morning, Valak was curt. Get yourself cleaned up and report to my office to take the test. I won't think you're ready, even if you pass, but the commander ordered me to have you available by lunch. He shook his head in annoyance. It's a shortcut. I hate shortcuts. Why? You won't have to risk yourself anymore. I regretted the words as soon as they had left my mouth. Valak's gaze was lethal. In my experience, shortcuts usually lead to death. Is that what happened to my predecessor? I asked, unable to stifle my curiosity. Would Valak confirm or deny Rand's theories? Oskov? Valak paused. He didn't have the stomach for it. Chapter 8. When I awoke the next morning, Valak's list of poisons was still clutched in my hand. I reviewed the poison inventory until the medic discharged me. Bruised muscles protested every movement as I headed for the door. I should have been happy to leave the infirmary, but my nerves preoccupied me. My stomach felt as if it contained a live mouse, trying to chew its way out. The guards stationed outside the infirmary door startled me. But they weren't wearing Brazel's colors, and I belatedly remembered that Valak had assigned them as protection until I reported to his office. I glanced around to get my bearings, but had no idea which direction led to my room. I had been living in the castle for 18 days, but I was still uncertain of its inner layout. The basic shape of the castle itself eluded me, having never seen it from the outside. The prison carriage that had brought me to the castle had been a square box with air holes. I had refused to peer out like some caged animal. When I reached the castle, I squeezed my eyes shut in an attempt to block out the anguish of being chained, groped, and dragged to the dungeon. I guess I could have focused on potential ways to escape, but I had accepted my punishment when I had killed Rayad. As much as I hated to ask the guards for directions to my room, I had no choice. Wordlessly, they guided me through the castle. One walked in front, the other followed. Only after the lead man inspected my room was I allowed inside. My uniforms hung undisturbed in the armoire, but instead of being hidden inside a drawer, my journal lay open on the top of the desk. Someone had read my impressions of poisons and other information. The queasy feeling in my gut was replaced by a cold, hard sensation. The mouse had died, reflecting my sour mood perfectly. I suspected Valak. He was bold enough to have gone through my personal papers. He had probably even reasoned that it was his duty to make sure I wasn't plotting something. After all, I was just the food taster, and not entitled to any privacy. Grabbing the journal and uniforms, I left my room and headed for the baths. The guards waited outside while I soaked in the water. I took my sweet time. Valak and his test could wait. I wasn't going to carry out his orders like some idiotic drone. Chased by Brazel's guards, finding poison in almost all of my meals, and being wagered on like some damn racehorse didn't cause me to be as angry as I was about Valak reading my journal. Arriving at Valak's office, I cut off any smart remark he could make by demanding, "Where's your test?" Amusement touched Valak's face. He rose from behind his desk. Sweeping his arm with a dramatic flourish, he indicated two rows of food and drinks on the conference table. "Only one item isn't poisoned. Find it. Then eat or drink your selection." I tasted each item. I sniffed. I gargled. I held my nose. I took small bites. I spat. Some of the food had grown cold. Most of the meals were bland, making the poison easy to spot, while the fruit drinks masked the poison. Finishing the last item, I turned to Valak. "You bastard. They're all poisoned. What a nasty trick. I should have suspected he would pull a stunt like that." "Are you sure?" "Of course. I wouldn't touch anything on that table." Valak's gaze was stony as he walked toward me. "I'm sorry, Yelena. You failed." My heart plunged into my stomach. The dead mouse resuscitated and began to gnaw holes in my gut. I searched the table. What had I missed? Nothing. I was right. I challenged Valak to prove me wrong. Without hesitation, he raised a cup. "This one is clean. Drink it." I remembered that cup. It was laced with a bitter poison. Valak's hand wavered a bit. He sipped. I bit my lip. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe it was the cup next to it. Valak held my gaze as he rolled the liquid around his tongue. He spat. I wanted to jump, to cheer, to dance little circles around him. Instead, I said, "Blackberry poison." "Yes," Valak said. He alternated between examining the cup in his hand and absentmindedly staring at the rows of cold food. "I passed." He nodded, still distracted. Then he walked to his desk, and he gently placed the cup down. Shaking his head, he picked some papers up, only to put them back unread. "I should have known you would try to trick me." My heated tone drew his eyes. I wished then that I'd remained silent. "You're all fired up, and it isn't because of the test. Explain yourself." "Explain? Why do I have to explain? Maybe you should explain why you read my journal." "There. I'd said it."
"Journal?"
Valak looked at me in amazement.
"I didn't read anything of yours."
"But if I had, it would have been within my rights." "Why?" I demanded. An incredulous look settled on Valak's face. His mouth opened and closed several times before he was able to voice his thoughts. "Yelena, you confessed to murder. You were caught straddling Rayard's body with a bloody knife in your hand. I searched your file for a motive. There was none. Only a report that you refused to answer all questions." Valak stepped closer. He lowered his voice. "Since I don't know what motivates you to kill, I can't predict if you'll do it again, or what might set you off. I'm bound by the code of behavior, so I had to offer you the choice of becoming the new taster." He drew a deep breath and continued. "You'll be very close to the commander on a daily basis. Until I can trust you, I'll be watching you." My anger leaked away. Why should I expect Valak to trust me when I didn't trust him? My composure returned. "How do I win your trust?"
"Tell me why you killed Rayard."
"You're not ready to believe me." Valak averted his gaze to the conference table. I covered my mouth with my hand. Why had I used the word ready? Ready implied that he would believe me at some point. Pure wishful thinking on my part.
"You're right," he said.
We seemed to be at an impasse. "I passed your test. I want my antidote." Roused into action, Valak drew a dose, handing it to me. "Now what?" I asked.
"Lunch, we're late."
He hustled me out the door. I gulped the white liquid as we moved. As we neared the throne room, the noise of many voices speaking at once echoed through the halls. Two of the commander's advisors were arguing. Officers and soldiers clumped behind the two advisors. The commander leaned against a nearby desk, listening intently. The group debated the best way to locate and recapture a fugitive.
The right side insisted upon using an oversupply of soldiers and tracking dogs, while the left claimed that a few clever soldiers would work. Brute force versus intelligence. The exchange, while loud, lacked anger. The guards stationed around the room stood relaxed. Surmising that this type of debate was common, I wondered if the fugitive was a real person or just part of a hypothetical exercise. Valak moved next to the commander. I stood behind them. The debate made me squirm because I couldn't help imagining myself as the poor soul being hunted. I pictured myself running through the woods, out of breath and straining to hear the sounds of pursuit. Unable to blend into a town because a new face would alert the soldiers on patrol. Bored soldiers whose only job was to watch, who were familiar with the town's inhabitants. Every citizen of the territory of Ixia had a specific job. After the takeover, everyone had been appointed an occupation. A citizen was allowed to move to a different town or military district, but proper forms were required. A completed transfer request needed approval from the supervisor, and proof that a position was being held at the new address. Without the proper documents, a civilian found in the wrong neighborhood was arrested. Visiting other districts was acceptable, but again, only as long as the proper papers were obtained and shown to the soldiers on arrival. While working in isolation with Brazil and Rayad, I had obsessively thought about escape. Thinking of freedom had been better than dwelling on my life as a laboratory rat. With no family or friends outside the manor to hide me, though, the southern lands were my best option, assuming I could penetrate the well-guarded border. I had created elaborate fantasies of stealing away to Citya, finding an adoptive family, and falling in love. Corny, sentimental rubbish, but it was my only elixir. Every day when the experiments began, my mind would focus on Citya, finding bright colors, loving gestures, and warmth. Holding those images in my mind, I endured Rayad's tests. But even if I had been given the opportunity to escape, I don't know if I would have seized it. Although I remembered nothing of my birth family, I did have a family living within the manor house. The other lost children who had been taken in. My sisters. My brothers. My children. I learned with them, I played with them, and I took care of them. How could I abandon them? To think of May or Kara taking my place was too much to bear. I bit on my finger until I tasted blood, and dragged my thoughts back to the present. I had escaped from Brazil. He would leave the castle in 2 weeks and return home, probably to the next round of experiments with a different laboratory rat. My heart went out to her, whoever she was. Brazil was brutal. She was in for a rough time, but I had saved her from Rayad. Pulling my hand away from my mouth, I inspected the bite mark. Not too deep, it wouldn't scar. I traced the network of semicircular scars that covered my fingers and knuckles. When I looked up, I caught Valak staring at my hands. I laced them behind my back. The commander raised his hand. Quiet descended in an instant.
Excellent points from both sides. We will put your theories to the test. Two teams.
Pointing to the two main debaters, the commander said,
You'll be the captains. Assemble your team and organize a plan of attack. Recruit as needed. Valak will supply a fugitive from one of his men. You have a fortnight to prepare.
The noise level rose as the commander headed toward his office with Valak and I close behind. Valak shut the office door, muffling the commotion.
Is Marak's escape to Citya still bothering you? He asked.
The commander frowned.
Yes. Sloppy work, that pursuit. Marak must have known you were an MD-8. You really need to train a couple of protégés.
Valak looked at him in mock horror.
But then I wouldn't be indispensable.
A quick smile graced the commander's face before he spotted me lingering near the corner.
Well, Valak, you were right about this one. She survived your test.
Then to me he said,
Come here.
My feet obeyed despite my hysterical heart.
As my official food taster, you're to report to me with my breakfast. I'll give you my daily itinerary and expect you to be present at each meal. I will not accept tardiness. Understand?
Yes, sir.
He glanced at Valak. She looks fragile. Are you sure she's strong enough?
Yes, sir. The commander appeared unconvinced. His golden eyes tracked from me to Valak as he contemplated.
I hoped with desperation that he wasn't looking for an excuse to fire me.
All right. Since I missed lunch, Velik, you will join me for an early dinner. Yelena, you start as my food taster tomorrow morning.
Yes, sir, Velik and I said in unison. We were dismissed.
We returned to Valak's office to gather my extra uniforms and journal. Velik escorted me to his living quarters, located in the central part of the castle. As we traveled the main hallways, I noticed that the bright areas of stone on the wall outnumbered the darker zones. A vast array of paintings must have been taken down. We also passed several large, colorless rooms that had been redesigned as either offices or barracks. It occurred to me that the commander's functional style and stark standards had robbed the castle of its soul. All that remained was a dead stone building reassigned to purely utilitarian purposes. I was too young to remember what life was like before the takeover, but I had been taught in Brazil's orphanage that the monarchy had been corrupt and its citizens unhappy. The takeover had been just that. To call it a war would be inaccurate. Most of the king's soldiers had switched loyalty to the commander. They had been disgusted with promotions based on bribery and blood ties instead of hard work and skill. Orders to kill people for minor infractions because a member of the elite was angry caused sour feelings among the men. Women had been recruited to the commander's cause, and they made excellent spies. Velik assassinated the key supporters of the king. When the king tried to raise an army to fight the commander's army, he had no defenders. The commander captured the castle without a fight, and little blood was shed. Most of the nobility had been killed, but a few had escaped to Citia. Velik and I arrived at a pair of massive wooden doors guarded by two soldiers. Velik spoke with the guards, instructing them that I was to be allowed access as needed. We entered a short hallway with two doors on opposite sides. Velik unlocked the door on the right and explained to me that the other led to the commander's apartment. Valak's living quarters turned out to be an expansive suite of rooms. Coming in from the gloomy hallway, I was struck by the brightness of the main L-shaped living area. Windows as thin as a tiger's stripes allowed sunlight to pour in. Piles of books occupied every corner and tabletop. Hand-sized gray rocks streaked with white and multicolored crystals were scattered throughout. Small black statues of animals and flowers glinted with silver. The statues dotted the room. Delicate and intricately detailed, they were similar to the panthers on Valak's office desk and were the room's only decoration. A considerable collection of weapons hung on the walls. Some of the weapons were old, dust-covered antiques that hadn't been used in years, while others shined. One long, thin knife still had fresh blood on the blade. The crimson liquid gleamed in the sunlight, causing a chill to snake through my body. I wondered who had been on the wrong end of that blade. To the left of the entrance was a stairway, and three doors lined the right wall of the living area. Velik pointed to the first door on the right. "That room is yours until Brazil leaves the castle. I suggest you get some rest." He picked up three books from an end table. "I'll be back later. Don't go out. I'll bring you dinner." Velik left, but then came back before the door shut. "Lock the door behind me. You should be safe here." Safe, I thought, turning the bolt, was the last thing I could ever feel here. Anyone who knew how to pick a lock could sneak in, grab a weapon, and have at me. I examined the swords on the wall and sighed with some relief. The weapons were anchored securely. I tugged hard on a mace just to be sure. The clutter surrounding my door was thicker than around the other two, and I discovered why when I entered. Clean, box-shaped areas were outlined by the thick dust that still coated the floor, bed, bureau, and desk. The room had been used for storage. Instead of cleaning it, Marge must have just moved the boxes out and considered her job done. Marge's minimal work was a not-so-subtle hint of her vast dislike for me. Perhaps it would be best to avoid her for a while. Inside the room, the bedding was filthy. A musty smell permeated. I sneezed. There was a small window, and after wrestling with the shutters, I managed to open it. The furniture was made of expensive ebony. Intricate carvings of leaves and vines curled down chair legs and across drawers. When I wiped the dust off the headboard, I uncovered a delicate garden scene with butterflies and flowers. After I stripped the bed of its dirty sheets and stretched out on the mattress, my impression of Marge as a harmless grump with a grudge evaporated. At that moment, I saw that a message had been written in the dust on the desk. It read, "Murderer, the noose waits." Chapter 9. I vaulted from the bed. The message disappeared from view, but I didn't feel any better. Little darts of fear pulsed from my heart as my mind leaped from one horrible scenario to the next. Was Marge warning or threatening me? Was she planning to earn the money she'd lost betting against me by turning me over to Brazel's goons for a fee? But why warn me? I calmed myself. Once again, I had overreacted. From what I'd seen and heard about Marge, her message was probably for the satisfaction of seeing me squirm. A peevish gesture because she was angry at having to do extra work for me. I decided it would be best not to give her any indication that I'd seen or had been affected by her childish note. Thinking back on it, I would bet that she had also read my journal, leaving it wide open on the desk just to annoy me. Valak had suggested I rest, but I was on edge. I went into Valak's living room. Marge's note had reminded me to stick to my instincts and not trust a soul. Then my worries would be minimized to tasting for poisons and avoiding Brazel. If only it was that simple or I was that strong. Naivete and blind trust may have been driven out of me by Brazel and Rayad, but deep down in the small corners of my heart, I still clung to the hope that I might find a true friend. Even a rat needs other rats. I could empathize with the rats. I, too, scurried around, looked over my shoulder, and sniffed for poison traps. Right now, I scrambled just to stay alive until the next day. But someday, I would be searching for a way out. Knowledge was power, so I planned to sit tight, to listen, and learn all I could. I started with Valak's living area. Lifting a rock off one of the tables, I began to pick my way through the clutter in his suite, surface snooping only because I suspected Valak would booby-trap his drawers. I found a couple of texts on poisons that interested me, but their contents dealt mostly with assassination and intrigue. Some of the books had worn leather bindings and were written in an archaic language that I couldn't decipher. Valak was either a collector or he had stolen the books from the Dead King's library. I was at the bottom of the stairs when I spotted a diagram of the castle's layout. It had been wedged into the corner of a picture frame hanging on the right wall of the staircase. Finally, something I could use. As I examined the map, I felt as if a translucent mask had been lifted off my face, allowing me to see the castle clearly. Postponing my explorations of the rooms upstairs, I retrieved my journal. The map was displayed in full sight. Valak wouldn't be upset that I had seen it. He'd probably be happy that I didn't need to ask for directions every time I had to go somewhere new. I cleared a space on the couch, wormed into a comfortable position, and began to copy the map. I jerked awake. My journal slammed to the floor. Blinking in the candlelight, my eyes searched the room. I had been dreaming of rats. They had poured down from the walls, welled up from the floor, and swarmed after me. A sea of biting rodents that seized clothes, skin, and hair in their sharp little teeth. A shudder shook my body. I lifted my feet off the floor as I scanned the room. No rats, unless I included Valak. He was halfway around the room, lighting the lanterns. As I watched him finish, I thought about Valak being a fellow rat. No, definitely not. A cat. And not just any ordinary household cat, but a snow cat. The most efficient predator in the territory of Ixia. Pure white. The snow cat was the size of two massive dogs fused together. Quick, agile, and lethal, the snow cat killed before its prey even suspected danger. They stayed mostly in the north where the snow never melted, but had ventured south when food grew scarce. No one in the history of Ixia had killed a snow cat. The predator either smelled, heard, or saw the hunter before he could get close enough to strike with a handheld weapon.
They bolted like lightning upon hearing the twang of a bowstring. The best the northern people could do was feed the cats, hoping to keep them on the snowpack and away from populated areas. After lighting the last lantern, Valak turned toward me. "Something wrong with your room?" He picked up a tray and handed it to me. "No. Couldn't sleep." Valak snorted with amusement. "I see." He gestured toward the tray. "Sorry your dinner is cold. I was detained." Automatically testing for poisons, I took a couple of small spoonfuls. I glanced at Valak to see if he was offended by the gesture. He was not. His face still held an amused expression. Between bites, I asked Valak if anyone else had a key to his suite. "Just the commander and Marge. Will that help you sleep better?" Ignoring his question, I asked, "Is Marge your personal housekeeper?" "Mine and the commander's." We wanted someone we could trust, someone instantly recognizable. She was with us before the takeover, so her loyalty is beyond doubt. Valak sat at his writing desk, but turned his chair to face me. "Remember when you were in the war room?" Confused by the change in subject, I nodded. "There were three generals in the room. Brazel you knew, but can you identify the other two?" "Tesso and Hazal," I answered, proud that I had remembered. "Can you describe them? Hair color? Eyes?" I hesitated as I thought back. They had worn generals' uniforms, and they had been eating lunch. I shook my head. "I think General Tesso had a beard." "You identified them by their uniforms and didn't look at their faces, correct?"
"Yes."
"That's what I thought."
"That's the problem with the uniform requirement. It makes a person lazy. A guard will see a housekeeping uniform and just assume that person belongs in the castle. It's too easy for someone to sneak about, which is why I keep the commander surrounded at all times by loyal people, and why Marge is the only housekeeper permitted to clean the commander's and my suites and offices."
Valak's tone made me feel as if I had been transported to a classroom. "Why not dismiss all the servants in the castle and use your own people?"
"Soldiers make up the majority of our army. Civilians who joined prior to the takeover were made advisors or given other prominent positions. Some of the king's servants were already on our payroll, and the others we paid double what they earned working for the king. Well-paid servants are happy servants."
"Does the entire castle staff get paid?"
"Yes."
"Including the food taster?"
"No."
"Why not?"
I hadn't even thought about receiving wages until Valak mentioned it. "The food taster is paid in advance. How much is your life worth?"
Chapter 10. Not expecting an answer, Valak swiveled back to his desk.
Ah, well, he had a point. I finished the cold food. When I set the tray aside to go to my room, Valak turned back to me.
"What would you buy with the money?"
A list rushed from my mouth, surprising even me. "A hairbrush, night clothes, and I'd spend some at the festival." I wanted night clothes because I was tired of sleeping in my uniform. I didn't dare sleep in my undergarments for fear I'd have to run for my life in the middle of the night. And the annual fire festival was approaching. It was sort of an anniversary for me. It had been during the previous fire festival that I had killed Rayad. Although the commander outlawed all forms of public religion, he encouraged the festivals as a form of boosting morale. Only two annual festivals were permitted. I had been in the dungeon during the last ice festival, missing the indoor event where artists and craftsmen displayed their work. The ice festival was always held during the cold season, when there was nothing to do but huddle by the fire and make crafts. It was a local event with each town hosting its own festival. The fire festival was a massive carnival that traveled from town to town during the hot season. The festival began in the far north, where the warm weather lasted a few short weeks and then wound its way south. Traditionally, additional performances and contests were scheduled for the week-long celebration at the castle in the middle of the hot season, and I was hoping I might be permitted to attend. Valak had indicated to me that he would be teaching me additional tasting techniques in the afternoons, but the rest of the time between meals had, so far, been mine.
I had always loved going to the fire festival. Brazel had given the children in his orphanage a small allowance so we could go each year. It had been the most anticipated event at Brazel's manor house. We would practice all year to qualify for the various contests and save every penny possible for the entry fee. Valak's practical voice interrupted my thoughts. You can get some night clothes from the seamstress, Delana. She should have included them with your uniforms. As to the rest, you'll have to make do with what you can find. Valak's words brought home the realities of my life, meaning fire festivals were not included. I might get a chance to see the festival, but I wouldn't be able to sample the spicy chicken steaks or taste the wine. Sighing, I picked up my journal and went into my room. A dry, warm breeze caressed my face. I cleaned the rest of the dust, but I only wiped away half of Marge's message. She had been right, in a way. The noose did wait for me. A normal life was not in my future. Her message would serve as a reminder to me to not get too comfortable. I was either going to screw up and be replaced as the food taster, or I was going to foil an assassination attempt with my own death. I might not technically die from a broken neck, but the haunting image of an empty noose would always plague me. The next morning, I hovered outside Delana's workroom. She sat in a small patch of sunlight, humming and sewing. Her golden curls gleamed. Unwilling to disturb her, I turned to go. Yelena, she called. I stepped back into view. My goodness, girl, just come in. You're always welcome. Delana put her sewing down and patted the chair next to her. When I joined her in the sunlight, she exclaimed, You're as thin as my finest thread. Sit. Sit. Let me get you something to eat. My protest didn't stop her from bringing me a large slice of buttered bread. My Rand sends me a steaming loaf of honey bread every morning. Her light brown eyes glowed with affection. I knew she would stand over me until I took a bite. Not wanting to hurt her feelings, I suppressed my desire to taste the bread for poisons. Only when my mouth was full was she satisfied. How can I help you? She asked. Between bites, I asked about nightclothes. My goodness, how could I have forgotten? You poor dear. She bustled around the room, assembling quite a collection. Delana, I said to stop her, I only need a few things. Why didn't you come sooner? Marge should have said something to me. Delana was genuinely upset. Marge, I began, then quit. I wasn't sure how Delana felt about her. Marge's a mean old grump, a spiteful hag, and an overgrown bully, Delana declared. I blinked at her in surprise. She instantly dislikes anyone new, and she's basically a plague on the rest of us. But she was nice to you. She hounded me for weeks after I first arrived. Then I snuck into her wardrobe and tightened all her skirts. It took her 2 weeks of physical discomfort to figure out what was happening. Delana swooped down next to me, smiling. Marge can't sew a stitch, so she had to tuck in her pride and ask for my help. Since then, she's treated me with respect. Delana grabbed my hand in hers. Unfortunately, you're her new target. But don't let her get to you. If Marge is nasty, be nasty right back. When she sees you're not easy prey, she'll lose interest. I had trouble believing that this lovely woman was capable of such underhandedness, but her smile held a glimmer of mischief. She draped a pile of nightclothes over my arms and added an array of brightly colored ribbons. For the festival, my dear, she said, answering my quizzical look, to augment your beautiful dark hair.
Have you found a fugitive for the exercise? The commander asked Valak as soon as Valak arrived in his office for lunch.
I was tasting the commander's food when Valak once again destroyed my tentative sense of well-being. Granted, I had been working as the official food taster for the last 10 days, but my stomach had finally stopped its painful contractions whenever I was near the commander.
Yes, I know the perfect person for the job.
Valak settled into the chair facing the commander.
Who?
Yelena.
What?
Having given up all pretense of minding my own business, my exclamation echoed the commander's.
Explain, the commander ordered.
Valak smiled at his reaction as though he knew all along what the commander would say.
My people are trained to avoid capture. Assigning one of them wouldn't be fair to the search party. Therefore, we need a person not skilled in the art of evasion, but who is intelligent enough to bring some challenge to the exercise.
Valak stood to continue his lecture.
The fugitive needs an incentive for a good chase, yet must return to the castle. I can't use a real prisoner. None of the servants have any imagination. I briefly considered the medic, but she's needed here in case of emergencies. I was about to assign one of your soldiers when I thought of Yelena.
Valak gestured toward me. She's smart, he counted with his fingers to emphasize his words. She'll have an incentive to perform well, and an incentive to return.
Incentives? A frown creased the commander's face.
The food taster receives no wages. But for this extra job, and others like it in the future, she can be paid. The longer she evades capture, the higher the payment. As for the incentive to return, that should be obvious.
It was to me. The daily antidote to butterfly's dust kept me alive. If I didn't return to the castle by the next morning, they would be searching for a corpse.
And if I refuse, I asked Valak.
I'll recruit one of the soldiers, but I'll be disappointed. I thought you would appreciate the challenge.
Maybe I don't...
Enough. The commander's voice was curt. It's preposterous, Valak.
That's the whole point. A soldier would make predictable moves. She's an unknown.
You might outguess our fugitive, but the people I've assigned to the exercise aren't that quick. I'm hoping to find someone who can be trained as your assistant. I understand what you're waiting for, but I don't believe it'll happen anytime soon. We need someone now.
The commander sighed. It was the most emotion I'd witnessed from him.
Valak, why do you constantly undermine my orders to instruct an assistant?
Because so far I have disagreed with your choices. When the suitable candidate appears, then all efforts to train him will be fully endorsed.
The commander glanced at the tray in my hands. Taking the food, he ordered me to fetch some hot tea. A thinly disguised ruse to be rid of me while they argued. I was more than happy to oblige. On my way to the kitchen, I mulled over the possibility of playing fugitive for Valak. My first reaction had been negative. I didn't need any more problems. But as I contemplated the challenge of eluding searchers, combined with the chance to earn some money, the exercise started to look like an excellent opportunity. By the time I reached the kitchen, I hoped Valak would win, especially since I would be outside the castle for a day, and any skills I learned from being a fugitive might prove useful in the future.
Something wrong with lunch? Rand asked, hurrying toward me, concern pulling the corners of his mouth tight.
No, just need some hot tea.
Relief softened his face.
I wondered why he was so worried that lunch had been unsatisfactory. An image of a younger Rand rebelling against the commander by ruining food as a form of sabotage entered my mind. I dismissed the thought. Rand wouldn't serve inferior food. His ego centered on his edible creations. There must be something else between him and the commander. Uncertain that our new relationship would survive asking personal, perhaps sensitive questions, I held my tongue. I'd known Rand for almost 2 weeks now, but I still hadn't figured him out. His moods ran the gamut and changed without notice. Rand liked to talk. He dominated most conversations and asked only a few personal questions. I doubted he really heard my answers before he rambled on again.
While you're here, Rand said, pulling a white cake from one of the cooling racks that hung on the wall like shelves. Can you try this? Let me know what you think.
He cut me a slice. Iced with whipped cream, the layers of vanilla cake were separated by a mixture of raspberries and cream. I tried to mask that my first bite tasted for poison.
Good combination of flavors, I said. It's not perfect, but I can't pinpoint the problem.
The cream is a little too sweet, I said, taking another bite, and the cake is slightly dry.
I'll try again. Will you come back tonight?
Why?
I need an expert opinion. It's my entry for the Fire Festival's baking contest. Are you going?
I'm not sure. When I had mentioned the festival the other night, Valak hadn't said that I couldn't go.
A bunch of us from the kitchen are going. You can come with us if you want.
Thanks. I'll let you know.
On my way back to the commander's office, an unpleasant thought wove its way into my mind. I had been staying close to Valak because Brazel was still in the castle and wasn't slated to leave until after the festival. If I played fugitive, what would happen if Brazel found out? What if I accidentally encountered him at the festival? Coming to the conclusion that I was safer within the castle walls until Brazel left, I decided to decline both Valak's and Rand's offers. But by the time I delivered the tea to the commander, Valak had already won his argument. He quoted cash incentives to me before I could say a word. The sum for remaining free for an entire day was a large amount. The exercise is scheduled to take place during the fire festival, a busy time for the soldiers. Should we postpone it until after? Valak asked the commander.
No, the added commotion will increase the level of difficulty for our pursuers.
Well, Yelena, that gives you only a few days to prepare. Fair enough, since some prisoners plan an escape route while others see an opportunity and bolt. Are you interested in the challenge? Valak asked.
Yes.
The word sprang from my gut before the rational no in my mind could escape. On the condition that Brazel not be informed of my participation.
Isn't having a room in my personal suite an indication that I'm properly concerned with your well-being? Valak's voice huffed. I realized that I had insulted him.
When I had offended Rand, I quickly tried to make amends. With Valak, I tried to think of another comment to annoy him further, but I couldn't produce one that quick.
Speaking of Brazel, the commander interrupted, he gave me a gift, a new dessert that his chef invented. He thought I might like it.
Commander Ambrose showed us a wooden box full of thick brown squares stacked on top of each other like tiles. They were smooth and shiny, but the edges looked as if they had been cut with a dull knife, ragged and shedding brown flakes.
Valak picked up a piece and sniffed it.
I hope you didn't try any. It's too blatant, even for Brazel, to be poisoned. But no, I didn't.
Valak handed the container to me. Yelena, take some pieces out at random and taste them. I sorted through the squares and selected four. They were each about the size of my thumbnail, and all four fit on the palm of my hand. If I hadn't been told they were a dessert, I probably would have guessed they were pieces of brown candle wax. My fingernail left an impression on the top, and my fingertips felt slightly greasy after handling them. I hesitated. These were from Brazel, and I didn't remember his cook being especially inventive. I shrugged off my trepidation. I had no choice. Thinking wax, I anticipated tasting wax. I bit into the hard cube, expecting it to crumble between my teeth. It must have been the expression on my face that caused the commander to rise, because I didn't say a word. The sensations in my mouth had me enraptured. Instead of crumbling, the dessert melted, coating my tongue with a cascade of flavor. Sweet, bitter, nutty, and fruity tastes followed one another. Just when I thought I could say it was one, I would taste them all again. This was unlike anything I had ever encountered. Before I knew it, all four cubes were gone. I longed for more. Unbelievable! What is it? Valak and the commander exchanged puzzled looks. The commander said,
Brazel called it Criollo. Why? Is there poison in it?
No.
No poisons. It's just...
The proper words to describe it failed me.
Try it, was all I could manage.
I watched the commander's face as he bit into one of the squares. His eyes widened and his eyebrows arched in surprise. His tongue dashed along his lips and teeth as he tried to suck all the remaining flavor from them. He grabbed another piece.
It's sweet.
Different.
But I don't taste anything unbelievable about it, Valak said, wiping the brown flakes from his hands.
It was my turn to exchange looks with the commander. Unlike Valak, he had an appetite for fine cuisine. He recognized excellence when he tasted it.
I'll bet that little rat won't last an hour, Marge's muffled voice said through the kitchen door.
I had been about to enter when I had heard her.
I'll give 50 to 1 to anyone stupid enough to think the rat'll last the day, and 100 to 1 to the sucker who thinks she won't be caught.
After Marge called the odds, the room erupted with sounds of betting.
I listened with growing horror. Marge couldn't be talking about me. Why would Valak tell Marge about the exercise? It'd be all over the castle by tomorrow. Brazel would find out.
I'll bet a month's wages that Yelena stays free all day, Rand's voice boomed out.
The rest of the kitchen staff grew quiet.
My emotions seesawed from betrayal to pride. They were betting on me, and I couldn't believe Rand had bet a month's wages. He had more confidence in me than I did in myself.
I tended to agree with Marge on this one.
Marge's laughter echoed on the tiled walls.
You've been in the kitchen too long, Rand. The heat's cooked your brain to mush. I think you're starting to like the little rat. Better lock up your knives when she's here, or she may...
All right, that's enough, Rand said. Dinner's over. Everyone out of my kitchen.
I moved down the hallway and out of sight. Since I had promised Rand I would taste his cake, I looped back to the kitchen after everyone had gone. Rand was sitting at one of the tables chopping nuts. There was a slice of his raspberry and cream cake on the table. He pushed the plate to me. I tasted it.
Much better. The cake is incredibly moist.
What's different? I asked.
I added put into the batter.
Rand was unusually quiet. He didn't mention the betting. I wasn't going to ask. He finished chopping the nuts. After cleaning up, he said,
I better get some sleep. We're going to the festival tomorrow night. Are you coming?
Who's going? I stalled. I hated to miss out on the first night of the festival. Hated to let Brazel ruin the only fun I'd have. Although, if Marge was going as well, I'd stay with my original decision.
Porter, Sammy, Liza, and maybe Delana.
Rand's tired eyes lit up ever so slightly when he said Delana's name.
Why?
When are you leaving? Again, my heart was ready to overrule the logical and safe choice.
After dinner? It's the only time everyone is free. The commander always orders an easy meal for the first night of festival so the kitchen staff can leave early. If you want to come, just meet us here tomorrow.
Rand headed to his rooms, which were adjacent to the kitchen, and I went back to Valak's suite. The dark apartment was empty. Locking the door, I groped around and found some flint. As I lit the lanterns, I passed by Valak's desk and noticed a paper lying on top. Glancing around to make sure Valak wasn't hiding in the shadows, I looked at the sheet. Names had been written on it, and then scratched out. My name had been circled. Underneath was the comment that I would make a perfect fugitive for the exercise. This was probably how Marge had known. I remembered seeing her reading papers in Valak's office before. Depending on how long these papers had been here, she could have known for a while. That woman was going to get me killed. If I survived long enough, I'd have to face her. Unfortunately, it would have to wait until after I played fugitive for Valak. As for my escape plan, I searched through Valak's piles of books. I remembered seeing some appropriate titles, and I was rewarded by finding two on the techniques of pursuit and one on the best ways to elude capture. Nobody said I couldn't do a little research. Borrowing Valak's texts, I took a lantern and retired to my room. I studied the books until my vision blurred with fatigue. Changing into my new night clothes, I extinguished the lantern and collapsed into bed. I was jolted awake by the frightening awareness that someone was in my room. Instant, sweat-soaked fear gripped me. A black shape loomed over me. Yanked out of bed, I slammed into the wall. One, two, three gasps passed. Nothing more happened. The assault had stopped, but I remained pinned. My eyes adjusted to the dark. I recognized my attacker's face. Valak? Chapter 11.
Valak's face, inches from mine, resembled a statue, silent, cold, and devoid of emotion. My door had been left ajar, and even the faint glow of lantern light slipping through the gap at the threshold couldn't lend his blue eyes any warmth.
Valak, what's wrong?
Without warning, he released me. Too late, I realized that he had held me suspended above the floor.
I landed in a heap at his feet. Wordless, Valak left my room. I staggered upright, feeling as if I had too many arms and legs, and managed to catch up to him in the living room. He stood in front of his desk. "If this is about the books," I said to his back, guessing that he was angry with me for borrowing his manuals. He turned. "Books? You think this is about books?" His voice held amazement for a brief moment before it turned sharp and cutting. "I've been a fool. All this time I admired your survival instincts and intelligence. But now..." He paused and then looked around the room as if searching for the right words. "I overheard some servants discussing you as the fugitive. They were placing wagers. How could you be so stupid, so indiscreet? I considered killing you now to save myself the trouble of hunting for your dead body later." "I didn't tell a soul," I allowed anger to color my voice. "How can you think I would jeopardize my own life?" "Why should I believe you? The only other person who knew was the commander." "Well, Valak, you're the spy master. Couldn't someone have overheard the conversation? Who else has access to this room? You left your notes in full view on your desk." Before he could leap to another wrong conclusion, I hurried on. They were conspicuous. If I noticed them with just a quick glance, then they begged for inspection to someone seeking information. "What are you saying? Who are you accusing?" A ridge of flesh grew above Valak's nose as his eyebrows pinched together. Alarm flashed across his face before being doused by his stone guise. His fleeting expression told me a great deal. Either Valak had been so convinced that I had gossiped to the servants that he hadn't considered other options, or he couldn't accept the possibility of a breach in his security. For once, I had thrown him off balance, if only for a second. Someday I would dearly love to see him in an ungainly heap at my feet. "I have my suspicions," I said, "but I'll accuse nobody without proof. It's unfair, and who would believe me?" "No one." Valak snatched a gray rock from his desk and hurled it toward me. Stunned, I froze as the stone whizzed past and exploded on the wall behind me. Gray debris pelted my shoulder and rained to the floor. "Except me." He sank into a chair. "Either I'm addicted to risk, or you're starting to make sense and we have a leak. An informer, a gossip, a mole. Whoever he is, we need to find him." "Or her." Valak frowned. "Do we play it safe and find another fugitive? Or cancel the exercise? Or continue as planned and make you both fugitive and bait, enticing our spy to reveal himself?" He grimaced. "Or herself." "You don't think Brazel will come after me?" "No. It's too soon. I don't expect Brazel to try to kill you before his factory is up and running. Once he gets what he wants, then it's going to get interesting around here." "Oh, good. I can barely stay awake now from all the boredom." My voice dripped with sarcasm. Only Valak would consider an attempt on my life a fascinating diversion. He ignored my remark. "It's your choice, Yelena." My choice wasn't contained in one of Valak's scenarios. My choice was to be someplace where my life wasn't in danger. My choice was to be where I didn't have an assassin for a boss and some unknown person trying to make my already intense life even more complicated. My choice was freedom. I sighed. The safer course of action was the most tempting, but it wouldn't solve anything. I had learned the hard way that avoiding problems didn't work. Run and hide were my trademark impulses, which only led to being trapped in a corner with no recourse other than to blindly strike out. The results were not always favorable. The lack of control, unnerving. My survival instinct seemed to have a mind of its own. Magic. The word floated at the edge of my mind. No, someone would have noticed by now. Someone would have reported me. Or would he if that someone was Brazel? Or Rayad? I shook my head, banishing the thoughts. It was in the past. I had more immediate concerns. Okay, I'll dangle on the hook to see what fish swims out. But who's going to hold the net? I will. I let out a slow breath. The tight feeling around my stomach eased. Don't alter your plans. I'll take care of everything. Valak picked up the paper with my name on it. He dipped the corner of the page into a lantern, setting it on fire. I should probably follow you to the fire festival tomorrow night.
unless logic has made you decide to turn down Rand's offer and stay in the castle. He let the burning paper float to the floor.
How did you...
I stopped. I wasn't going to ask. It was well known that he didn't trust Rand, so I shouldn't be surprised that Valak had an informant in the kitchen. Valak hadn't said I couldn't go. I made a sudden decision. I'm going. It's a risk. So what? I take a risk every time I sip the commander's tea. At least this time I might get a chance to enjoy myself. It's hard to have fun at the festival without money. Valak crushed the dying embers of the paper under his boot. I'll manage. Would you like an advance on your wage as a fugitive?
No. I'll earn the money.
I didn't want Valak to do me any favors. I was unprepared for thoughtfulness from him. For Valak to soften even a little might destroy our strange tug-of-war relationship, and I was reluctant for it to alter. Besides, thinking kind thoughts about Valak could be extremely dangerous. I could admire his skills and be relieved when he was on my side in a fight. But for a rat to like the cat? That scenario ended only one way, with one dead rat.
Suit yourself, Valak said.
But let me know if you change your mind. And don't concern yourself about the books. Read all the books you want. Heading back to my room, I paused with my hand resting on the doorknob.
Thanks, I spoke to the door, unwilling to look at Valak.
For the books?
No.
The offer. My eyes traced the wood grain.
You're welcome.
The castle hummed with activity. Smiling servants rushed through the corridors, laughter echoed off the stone walls. It was the first day of the fire festival, and the castle staff hurried to complete their chores so they could attend the opening celebration. Their excitement was contagious, and even after a restless night of sleep, I was beginning to feel like a child again. Determined to push the ugly image of someone stalking me at the festival to a far, dark corner of my mind, I allowed myself to savor the anticipation of the evening's events. I fidgeted through an afternoon lesson with Valak. He was trying to teach me how to spot a tail. It was mostly common sense advice and some techniques that I had already read about in one of his books, and my mind wandered. I wasn't planning on looking over my shoulder all night. Sensing my mood, Valak ended the session early. Soon after, I grabbed a clean uniform and the colored ribbons Delana had given me and headed toward the baths. At this time of day, the steaming pools were empty. I washed fast and sank into one of the baths. Inching my way into the hot liquid, I let each muscle relax, ooing and aahing until the water reached my neck. Only when the skin on my fingers began to wrinkle did I leave the water. I had been avoiding the mirror for a month. Now, curious, I scanned my reflection. Not as skeletal, although I needed to gain some more weight. My cheeks were hollow and my ribs and hip bones poked through my flesh. What had once been dull, uncombable black hair now shone. The scar on my right elbow had turned from bright red to a deep purple. Swallowing, I looked far into the mirror. Had my soul returned? No. Instead, I saw Rayad's smirking ghost floating behind me, but when I turned around, he was gone. I wondered what Rayad wanted.
Revenge, most likely, but how would you confront a ghost?
I decided not to worry about it tonight.
Changing into a clean uniform, I braided the brightly colored ribbons into my hair. I let the ends fall past my shoulders and loosely down my back. When I reported to the commander to taste his dinner, I expected a tart comment on my unmilitary hairstyle. All I received was one raised eyebrow. After dinner, I raced to the kitchen. Rand greeted me with a huge smile. The staff was still cleaning, so I helped scrub the countertops and floors to avoid the awkwardness of just standing around waiting. Rand reigned over an immaculate kitchen, and only when the kitchen was spotless was the staff dismissed.
While Rand changed out of his stained uniform, I watched a small group of people talking among themselves as they waited for him. I knew them all by sight and reputation, but hadn't spoken to any of them. Occasionally, one or two glanced warily in my direction. I suppressed a sigh, trying not to let their nerves bother me. I couldn't blame them. It wasn't a secret that I had killed Rayad. Of the group, Porter was the oldest.
He was in charge of the commander's kennels. Another holdover from the king's reign, he had been deemed too valuable to be replaced. He scowled more than he smiled, and Rand was his only friend. Rand had told me stories about Porter in an, "I can't believe anyone would believe such nonsense," tone of voice. But wild rumors that Porter had mental links with the dogs made him an outcast. The uncanny way the dogs responded and understood Porter seemed abnormal, almost magical. The suspicion of magic was enough for anyone to treat Porter like he had a contagious disease. Still, no one had proof, and his rapport with the animals was useful, something the commander prized. Sammy was Rand's fetch boy. A thin child of 12, his sole purpose was to obtain anything Rand needed. I'd seen Rand yell at Sammy, then hug him in the space of a heartbeat. Liza was a quiet woman only a few years older than me. She was the castle's pantler, in charge of the pantry's inventory. Liza plucked at her uniform sleeve like she was nervous, but I guess talking with Porter was better than being near me. When Rand emerged from his rooms, we left the castle. Sammy raced ahead of the group, too excited to stay with us for very long. Porter and Liza continued their discussion, while Rand and I trailed behind. The night air was refreshing. I could smell the clean scent of damp earth tinged with the distant aroma of wood smoke. It was my first trip outside in almost a year, and before we went past the gate and the immense stone buttress that surrounded the castle complex, I peered back. Without a moon, it was too dark to see any detail besides the few lighted windows and the towering walls. The complex appeared deserted. If Valak followed, I couldn't spot him. When we cleared the gate, a breeze greeted us as the day's hot air cooled. I walked with my arms held slightly away from my body, allowing the air to flow past me. My uniform rippled in the wind and my hair blew. I inhaled, enjoying the fresh evening scent. We walked through the grass field that surrounded the guard walls. No buildings were permitted within a quarter mile of the castle. The town, once named for Queen Jewel, was renamed Castletown after the takeover. Jewel's town had been built by the king in the valley south of the castle complex as a gift for his wife. The fire festival's tents had been set up in the fields just west of Castletown. "Isn't Delana coming?" I asked Rand.
"She's already there. Some big emergency came up this afternoon. When the dancers opened the costume boxes, they discovered that some animal had eaten holes in all of the outfits. They called Delana to help mend them before the opening ceremony."
Rand laughed.
"I bet the panic that reigned after they opened the boxes would have been fun to watch."
"Fun for you, but not for the poor woman in charge of costumes."
"True."
Now silent, he limped beside me. Because of our slower pace, we fell farther behind the others.
"Where's your cake?"
I hoped I hadn't ruined his good mood.
"Sammy ran it down this morning. The baking contest is judged on the first day so they can sell the entries while they're fresh. I want to check the results."
"How come you're not entering any competitions?"
A simple question, one of many about the festival that I had been avoiding with some success since Rand and I became friends. At first I suspected his interest to be an attempt to gain some insider information for the next round of betting. But now that the gambling was finished, I realized his interest was genuine. "No money for the entry fees," I said. The truth, but not the entire story. I would need to completely trust Rand before I would tell him about my history with the Fire Festival.
Rand clucked his tongue in disgust. "It doesn't make sense not to pay the food taster. Otherwise, what better way to obtain information about the commander than to bribe the taster?"
He paused, then turned to me, his face serious.
"Would you sell information for money?"
Chapter 12. I shivered at Rand's question. Was he asking just to ask, or was he offering to pay me for information? I imagined Valak's reaction if he discovered that I had taken a bribe. Having no money was better than facing his wrath. "No,"
I wouldn't, I said.
Rand grunted. We walked in an unnatural silence for a while. I wondered if Oskov, the old food taster, had taken money for information. It would explain why Valak hadn't liked him, and why Rand suspected Valak of killing Oskov.
If you'd like, I'll pay the entry fee for you. Your help has been invaluable, and I've certainly won enough money on your resourcefulness, Rand said.
Thanks, but I'm not prepared. It'd be a waste of money. Besides, I was determined to enjoy the festival without money, just to prove to Valak that it could be done. Despite promising myself I wouldn't, I glanced back over my shoulder. Nothing. I tried to convince myself that not seeing Valak was a good thing. If I could spot him, then anyone could. Still, the nagging feeling that maybe he had decided to let me take my chances wouldn't quit. Stop it, I told myself. Don't worry. Then again, I'd be an idiot to walk around the festival blind to danger. I felt as if I balanced on a high wire, trying not to fall. Could I watch for trouble and have fun at the same time? I didn't know, but was determined to try.
Which competition would you have entered? Rand asked.
Before I could answer, he waved his hands in front of me.
No, don't tell me. I want to guess.
I smiled. Go ahead.
Let's see. Small, thin, and graceful. A dancer?
Try again.
Okay. You remind me of a pretty bird, willing to sit on the windowsill as long as nobody comes too close, but prepared to fly away if somebody does. A songbird. Perhaps you're a singer?
You've obviously never heard me sing. Are all your guesses going to come with a lengthy discussion of my personality, I asked?
No. Now be quiet, I'm trying to think.
The glow from the festival was growing brighter. I heard the distant buzz of music, animals, and people blended together.
Long, thin fingers. Maybe you're a member of a spinning team, Rand guessed.
What's a spinning team?
Usually there's one shearer, one carder, one spinner, and one weaver in a team. You know, sheep to shawl. The teams race to see who can shear a sheep's wool and turn it into a garment first. It's pretty amazing to watch.
Rand studied me for a while. I began to wonder if he had run out of guesses.
A jockey?
Do you really think I could afford to buy a racehorse? I asked in amazement. Only the very wealthy citizens had horses to race for sport. The military used horses for the transportation of high-ranking officers and advisors only. Everyone else walked.
People who own racehorses don't ride them. They hire jockeys. And you're the perfect size, so stop looking at me like I'm daft.
As we arrived at the first of the massive, multicolored tents, our conversation ceased as we absorbed the frenzied activity and panoramic sights that assaulted us. When I was younger, I used to stand amid the chaos and feast on the energy of the fire festival. I had always thought the name of the festival was perfect, not because it occurred during the hot season, but because the sounds and smells pulsated like heat waves, making my blood sizzle and pop. Now, after spending close to a year in a dungeon, I felt the force slamming into me as though I were a brick wall, a wall whose mortar threatened to crumble from the overload of sensations. Torches blazed and bonfires burned. We walked into a slice of captured daylight. The performance and competition tents were scattered throughout the festival, with small open stands tucked in and around them like children clinging to their mother's skirts. From exotic gems to fly swatters, the merchants sold an array of goods. The aroma of food cooking made my stomach grumble as we passed several barbecue pits, and I regretted having skipped dinner in my haste to get here. Entertainers, contestants, spectators, and laughing children ebbed and flowed around us. Sometimes the press of people hurried us along from behind, and sometimes we struggled to go forward. We had lost track of the others. If he hadn't linked his arm in mine, I probably would have been separated from Rand as well. Distractions peppered the festival. I would have followed the lively music to its source or lingered to watch a skit, but Rand was determined to see the results of the baking contest. As we moved, I examined faces in the crowd, searching for green and black uniforms, even though Valak had said Brazel wouldn't be a threat. I thought it prudent to avoid him and his guards altogether. Unsure of who I was looking for, I watched for unusual faces. It was the wrong way to detect a tail.
Valak had taught me that the best agents were unremarkable in appearance and didn't draw attention to themselves. But I figured if a skilled spy followed me, my chances of spotting him or her was small. We met up with Porter and Liza in a small tent filled with a sweet aroma that made my stomach ache with hunger. They were talking to a large man in a cook's uniform, but they stopped when we entered. Surrounding Rand, they congratulated him on his first place win. The heavy man declared that Rand had broken a festival record by winning 5 years in a row. While Rand examined the array of baked goods lining the shelves, I asked the man who had won in Military District 5. I was curious if Brazil's cook had won with his Criollo recipe. The man's brow creased with concentration, causing his short, curly black hair to touch his thick eyebrows.
Bronda won it with a heavenly lemon pie.
Why? I thought General Brazil's chef, Ving, might win. I used to work at the manor.
Well, Ving won 2 years ago with some cream pie, and now he enters the same pie each year, hoping it'll win again.
I thought it odd that he hadn't entered his Criollo, but before I could deduce a reason, Rand jubilantly swept us out of the tent. He wanted to buy everyone a glass of wine to celebrate his victory. We sipped our wine and wandered around the festival. Sammy materialized on occasion from the crowd to report some wonder with great delight, only to rush off again. Twice I spotted a woman with a serious expression. Her black hair was pulled into a tight bun. Wearing the uniform of a hawk mistress, she moved with the grace of someone used to physical exercise. The second time I saw her, she was much closer, and I made eye contact. Her almond-shaped emerald eyes narrowed, staring boldly back at me until I looked away. There was something familiar about her, and it was some time before I figured it out. She reminded me of the children in Brazil's care, and was more similar to my own coloring than to the pale ivory complexion of most of the territory's people. Her skin was bronze, not tanned from the sun, but a natural pigmentation. Then our aimless group was snared in a flow of spectators heading into a big red and white striped tent. It was the acrobatics tent, where trampolines, tight ropes, and floor mats were covered with brightly costumed men and women. They were all trying to pass the qualifying round. I watched as one man performed a beautiful series of flips on the tightrope, only to be disqualified when he fell during his solo tumbling run. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Rand watching me, his expression triumphant. "What?" I asked.
"You're an acrobat."
"I was an acrobat." Rand waved his hands.
"Doesn't matter. I was right."
It mattered to me. Rayad had tainted acrobatics. The time when I felt satisfaction and enjoyment from performing was gone, and I couldn't imagine getting any happiness from it now. From the benches in the tent, our small kitchen group watched the contestants. Grunts of effort, sweat-soaked costumes, and thumping feet made me long for the days when all that worried me was finding time to practice. Four of us in Brazil's orphanage had taken up acrobatics. We had scavenged and begged for materials to set up a practice area behind the stables. Our mistakes sent us crashing to the grass until the stable master took pity on our bruised bodies. One day we arrived to find a thick coating of dung-scented straw carpeting our practice area. Brazil's teachers had encouraged us to discover something we could excel in. While some found singing or dancing to be their calling, I had been fascinated by the acrobatic displays since my first fire festival. Despite hours of practice, I failed during the qualifying round at my inaugural competition. The disappointment stabbed my heart, but I healed the ache with resolve. I spent the next year covered with black and blue marks, nursing sprains too numerous to count. When the festival returned, I passed the qualifiers and the initial round, only to fall off the tightrope in the second. Each year I worked hard and advanced steadily. I won through to the final round the year before Brazil and Rayad claimed me as their laboratory rat. Brazil and Rayad didn't allow me to practice acrobatics, but that didn't stop me from slipping away whenever Rayad was on some mission for his father. What did stop me was getting caught by Rayad a week before the festival, when he arrived home early from a trip. I was concentrating so hard that I failed to notice him astride his horse until I finished my tumbling routine.
His expression, a mixture of anger and elation, caused the beads of sweat on my skin to turn into ice crystals. For disobeying his orders, I was forbidden to go to the festival that year. And as an added deterrent to disobedience, I was punished for the duration of the festival. Each evening for 5 nights, Rayad forced me to strip. With a cruel grin on his face, he stared at me as I stood shivering despite the warmth of the night. He draped heavy chains from a metal collar around my neck to metal cuffs on my wrists and ankles. I wanted to scream, to beat him with my fists, but I was too terrified to anger him further. Pleasure at my fear and humiliation made his face flush as he drove me with a small whip to perform acrobatics of his own devising. A lashing sting on my skin was the reprimand for moving too slow. The chains battered my body as they swung with my movements. Their weight dragged at my limbs, making each tumble an exhausting ordeal. The cuffs began to rub my wrists and ankles raw. Blood streaked down my arms and legs. When Brazel participated in the experiments, Rayad meticulously followed his father's instructions. But when he was alone with me, the indifferent exercises turned vicious. Sometimes he would invite his friend, Magkan, to assist him, and they made my hell a contest to see who invented the best way to test my endurance. I was in constant fear that I would madden Rayad enough to force him to cross the only line he seemed to have drawn. For all the torture and pain he inflicted, he never raped me. So I somersaulted and cartwheeled with chains just to keep him from crossing that line. Rand's heavy arm fell across my shoulders. I flinched back into the present.
Yelena, what's wrong?
Rand's eyes, full of concern, searched mine.
You looked like you were having a nightmare with your eyes open.
Sorry.
Don't apologize to me. Here.
He handed me a steaming meat pie.
Sammy brought these for us.
I thanked Sammy. When my attention focused on him, his eyes grew wide and his young face whitened. He averted his gaze. Without thinking, I took a small bite and tasted for poison. Finding nothing, I ate and wondered what wild stories had been told about me to cause Sammy's fearful reaction. Children Sammy's age usually enjoyed scaring each other with imaginative horror tales.
We used to frighten ourselves at the orphanage after the lanterns had been blown out and we were in bed waiting for sleep. Whispered stories about monsters raging and magicians' curses made us gasp and giggle. We told gruesome tales about the older graduates of the orphanage, who just seemed to disappear. No explanation was given to us of where they were working, and we never encountered any of them in town or in the manor house, so we created horrible scenarios about their fates.
How I missed those nights with the other children when I was finally able to rest after spending a day with Rayad. He had isolated me from the others. Taken from the girls' dorm, I had been given a small room next to Rayad's suite. At night, with my body aching and my spirits crushed, I would lie awake and recite those tales in my mind until I fell asleep.
Yelena, we can go.
What? I looked at Rand.
If this is upsetting you, we can go. There's a spectacular new fire dance.
We can stay. I was just reminiscing. But if you want to see the fire dance, I'll go along.
Reminiscing? You must have hated being an acrobat.
Oh, no. I loved everything about it. Flying through the air, the complete control over my body as I spun and twirled, the thrill of knowing I was going to land the perfect dismount before I even hit the ground. I stopped. The confusion on Rand's face made me want to laugh and cry at the same time. How could I explain to him that it wasn't the acrobatics that upset me, but the events that they had triggered? Rayad's cruel punishment for practicing, sneaking out to participate in the festival the following year, which had led to Rayad's death. I shuddered. Those memories of Rayad were like a trap in the corner of my mind, and I wasn't ready to spring it. Someday, Rand, I'll explain. But for now, I would like to see the fire dance. He hooked his arm around mine as our kitchen group left the tent and joined in the flow of people.
Sammy raced ahead, shouting over his shoulder that he would save us some good seats. A drunken man bumped into me, and I stumbled. He mumbled an apology and saluted me with his mug of ale. Trying to make a bow, he landed in a heap at my feet. I would have stopped to help him, but I was distracted by the appearance of blazing staffs of wood. I felt a pulsating rhythm vibrating through the soles of my feet as the fire dancers spun the flaming props around their heads and paraded into the tent. Amazed by the dancers' intricate movements, I stepped over the drunk. But with the excitement and press of people through the entrance, Rand's grip was broken. I wasn't concerned until I found myself surrounded by four immense men. Two of the men wore blacksmith's uniforms, while the other two wore farmer's work uniforms. Excusing myself, I tried to slip past them, but they only pressed closer, trapping me.